Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
We take you to Ukraine, where a hospital's chief doctor faked a COVID outbreak to keep Russian forces at bay.
Dr. Amiga went outside in full protective gear with a mask and a bodysuit and shoe covers and the whole nine yards and said, like, I'm so sorry, you can't come in. There's a horrible COVID outbreak here. It would be dangerous, like, for you and for the patients. And the Russians left.
And Congress says it's going to step in to stop a railroad strike. Plus, why restaurants are flocking to chicken. It's Tuesday, November 29th. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress will take up legislation to stop a nationwide railroad worker strike. Unions representing engineers, conductors, and other workers have rejected the terms of an earlier deal with freight railroads over issues like work schedules and paid sick leave. Wall Street Journal Congress reporter Katie Stetch-Ferrick says some lawmakers in both parties hope to avoid forcing workers to accept a contract.
Some Republicans feel like it's not their place to interfere with private negotiations. There are Democrats that really don't like telling union workers to accept something that they don't deem acceptable, but that's where we are. So we're expecting legislation from Ms. Pelosi tomorrow. It looks as though it will impose some sort of previously negotiated deal with a few more expanded benefits on rail workers.
A federal jury in Washington convicted two members of the Oath Keepers militia of seditious conspiracy charges tied to the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. One of the two was Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the far-right group. Three others were found guilty of lesser charges. AMC Networks, home to shows like Mad Men and Breaking Bad, says it will lay off about 20% of its U.S. workers. Earlier today, AMC said its CEO, Christina Spade, was stepping down less than 3 months after she took the helm. AMC's chairman has said the company thought its streaming service would make up for losses as people cut cable TV services, but that didn't happen. After 2 years of pandemic holiday seasons, Black Friday has made a comeback. The number of people going to physical stores jumped 17% from last year, while the number of online shoppers rose 2%, according to the National Retail Federation. The NRF estimates that between Thanksgiving Day and Cyber Monday, 197 million Americans visited stores or shopped online. Shoppers spent an average of $325.44, and that's up 8% from a year ago. Home prices slid by 1% in September, marking the first time prices have declined for 3 straight months in nearly 4 years, according to the S&P Case-Shiller Index, which measures home prices across the U.S. The housing market had boomed during the pandemic, with prices peaking in the spring. But prices have fallen due to a surge in mortgage rates pushing many buyers to the sidelines. Still, home prices continue to rise on an annual basis because the inventory of homes for sale are at unusually low levels. Meanwhile, the federal government will soon back mortgages of more than $1 million in high-cost areas of the country via mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Our economics reporter Andrew Ackerman says that's likely to renew debate about the extent to which taxpayers should back the mortgage market.
Fannie and Freddie, of course, they backstop half of the mortgage market. What they do is important because it determines who gets access to mortgage credit and on what terms, what costs, basically. They have a bunch of obligations related to affordable housing. And if you see Fannie and Freddie backing ever higher and higher loans, I think at some point you have to ask, is this system meeting the goals it was designed to serve? Does it make sense for taxpayers to effectively be backstopping $1 million-plus mortgages?
The new record-breaking limit will be applied in parts of California and New York. The rate of gun deaths in the U.S. got close to a three-decade high last year, according to federal data. Guns caused a record 48,953 deaths, equaling around 15 fatalities per 100,000 people, an analysis in the journal JAMA Network Open showed. Gun-related deaths of women and children have risen, the analysis said, but men remain far more likely to die from guns. And in World Cup news, the U.S. beat Iran 1-0 in a supercharged game, and it's on to the knockout round. Christian Pulisic scored the game's only goal just before halftime.
Dance is stuck in behind, Dance in the middle, Pulisic scores!
The Americans play the Netherlands next in the round of 16 on Saturday. Coming up, Russian forces occupied Kherson in Ukraine for months, but a hospital there refused to let them take over. We'll explore how they did it after the break.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. By empowering the brightest minds, GE Aerospace is reimagining engine design and advanced aircraft systems, developing hybrid electric engines and technologies compatible with alternative fuels like sustainable aviation fuel. GE Aerospace strives every day to invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine is 9 months old, and recently Ukrainian forces have been rolling back some of Moscow's gains. The city of Kherson is one of those places. It's a regional capital in the south and a strategic prize along the Dnieper River. Inside Kherson is Tropinka Hospital, where the staff were determined not to let the Russians take over. To do that, they had to outwit and outweight the troops and even staged a fake COVID outbreak to keep control. The Wall Street Journal's Ian Lovett has been reporting in Kherson, and he's with me now. Hi, Ian.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Tell me about this hospital. What does it look like?
It looks like a Soviet-era hospital. The facade has been redone. It does not look like a modern hospital that you would see in the U.S. There's no automatic doors. Occasionally, dogs, as I was there, were coming inside and lounging in the entryway to the hospital. It's a good hospital by Ukrainian standards, and I think that the standard of care there is quite good, but there's nothing at all fancy about it.
The chief doctor of that hospital, he was really determined to keep it out of Russian hands. Tell me more about him.
So the chief doctor, Leonid Remiga, he's a former city council member, and he had been the chief doctor at this hospital since 1995. And, you know, the Russians, when they arrived, were expecting basically a lot of Soviet nostalgia. But that was just not Dr. Remiga's attitude at all. You know, when I asked him about this, he went on and on about how you see in the West how advanced things are compared to what it was like in the Soviet times, and that being taken over by Russia would be like going backwards, and that he did not want to go back. And that was the attitude that much of the staff at the hospital have, and frankly, much of the population in Kherson.
So tell me about what they did to resist the troops who were coming to the hospital and trying to take over.
So the first time they came was on March 7th, so just a couple of weeks into the war, and they came with a film crew and asked Dr. Remiga to take down this Ukrainian flag that was hanging over the main entrance. And it seemed like they were expecting him to just do it, but he said no. He said, "You can shoot me if you want to, but I'm not going to take it down." And they ended up just leaving. And
wow.
A couple days later, another group of Russians came back, this time in an armored personnel carrier, and they said, "We are taking over this hospital. It is now going to be a military hospital. Please, everyone leave." But Dr. Remiga went outside in full protective gear with the mask and a bodysuit and shoe covers and the whole nine yards, and said, "Like, I'm so sorry. You can't come in. There's a horrible COVID outbreak here. It would be dangerous, like, for you and for the patients." They had heard that the Russians were a little bit spooked about COVID, and in that case, the Russians left. And then other doctors, they took computers home and hid them. In one case, a doctor hid the remote to a CT scanner and then told the Russians that if they tried to take it away, it wouldn't work. There were a lot of different, mostly quite small things they did, but they did whatever they felt like they were going to be safely able to do.
And could you tell us some more about the day-to-day running of this hospital? Over 8 months, when Russians were in the city, what did it look like?
It looked pretty normal for most of that time. Injured civilians were sometimes coming in from frontline villages. One of the funnier things that I heard, not only from doctors at this hospital, but from other hospitals in Kherson as well, is that as time wore on, and especially once the Ukrainian offensive began, Russian soldiers kept coming in and asking the doctors to write that they had some injury that made it impossible for them to fight so that they could leave the front. So, for example, one doctor I spoke to said a man came in and asked about his knee, and the doctor looked at the knee and said it didn't look that bad. And the man said, "Can you please exaggerate?" And the doctor was like, "Great, I'll get him out of here," and said he had stage 2 arthritis. A lot of staff left over the course of the occupation. And in terms of what it was like to work there, that was probably the biggest change, where if originally there were 4 doctors in the trauma department, by the fall, there was only 1.
Did Dr. Romiga manage to keep control of the hospital the whole time?
So, no, not the entire time, but for quite a while. At the start of June, the Russians ousted him from the hospital, and they said they were going to take him to jail. But then as they were leaving, he started to have a stroke, and other staffers convinced the Russians that he needed to stay for treatment. And so he spent the next couple of months basically helping, along with the nurse who had been put in charge in his stead, run the hospital from his sickbed. And then at the start of August, that nurse fled. And when she didn't show up at work, troops came looking for him. And he was alerted by other staffers and kind of slipped out through a back entrance to the hospital. And he spent the next 2 months until near the end of September on the run, when he was detained. And they moved him to a more comfortable cell and had him treat some of the other patients' injuries. And then he was released and just told to stay away from the hospital. And there were only a couple weeks between that and when the Russians left the city.
Now that it's a few weeks after and winter setting in, what are you hearing from people at the hospital and others in Kherson?
In a lot of ways, even though electricity is coming back and cell service is improving, conditions are getting worse in the city. The Russians are shelling daily, mostly close to the river, so not in the area the hospital's in, but there's shelling all over the city and people are getting injured as a result of that. The last couple of times I went in, there were long, long lines of cars leaving the city, and some Ukrainian officials have been encouraging people to leave the recently deoccupied areas, not just Kherson, but basically all of the Kherson region that just got retaken. But you know, I think we'll see whether Ukraine is able to push on from here and take back the rest of the Kherson region or other parts of the south in the coming months, or we're just going to have a new line that's relatively frozen for a while.
This is fascinating reporting from The Wall Street Journal's Ian Lovett. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Danielle.
And finally, chicken lovers are getting a bite of relief from pandemic-related troubles that previously pecked at food manufacturers and restaurants. During the pandemic, labor shortages and other challenges constrained chicken supplies. Boneless, skinless breast meat prices rose to $3.50 a pound earlier this year, tripling since the start of 2021, according to Erna Barry data. At one time, the chain Noodles & Co. even added a $1 surcharge to account for the increased cost. But since June, the price of chicken breasts, tenders, and wings has fallen about 70%. Our reporter, Heather Haddon, says restaurants are using this moment to show some pluck.
So when prices decline, it does give breathing room to these brands to have some confidence that they might make money on the items they're promoting when it comes to chicken. So Popeyes helped create some of this chicken wars back in 2019 with their crispy chicken sandwich. They introduced a new blackened chicken sandwich in November, and a brand like Applebee's, they had a one-day special on Halloween where they were offering really steep discounts on wings and freebies of wings when people ordered.
For its part, Noodles & Co. has dropped the chicken surcharge. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.